Welcome in to episode number 8 of Football 52. I'm Brady Hull, as always, joined by the one and only head UNC football coach, Ed Lamb. Coach, always great to see you, man. I'm looking forward to this episode. We've had a lot of fun with these so far.
I sure have. Yeah, thanks, Brady. Glad to be here and doing this again this week.
All right, we're obviously going to get into a lot of things, obviously UNC football related, but I want to pick your brain at some point because the NFL's moving and shaking. These last couple of days, you had the owners and general managers and coaches all getting together for their big media thing this week, and we're getting some rule changes, so kind of wanted to pick your brain about that throughout the process today, throughout the podcast. But first and foremost, I want to get into all things UNC football. Obviously, it's a big week. We got spring football going on, and just like that, the weather snapped right out of it. Crazy yesterday, beautiful, should be beautiful today. We'll see how it goes. But a good week to start some spring football.
It is. Yep. A great week. I think we talked about it last time. The NCAA allows pretty much 15 practices over about a 30-day period. And there's some legislation in there that if you have this spring break during that block of time, then there's some flexibility around that. But so we didn't practice yesterday, but it was technically the first day of our spring practice sessions of that 30 okay. days. And we'll have our first practice on Wednesday. The weather looks good for that. Like I said, we'll try to get some cold or bad weather practices in there and take pride in being a bad weather team, but also want to get it kickstarted the right way with a lot of expectation of high execution. So Wednesday looks like a really good day to be out there. Took full advantage yesterday of our extra time. We now are in a 20-hour per week period. Most of the off season is an 8-hour per week. In other words, the players are putting in 8 hours per week of mandatory training. Now we've entered into that 30-day spring practice phase, it's now a 20-hour per week period.
Okay.
So we were able to take full advantage of that yesterday. A lot of meetings, a lot of film work, a nice long weightlifting session. And so even though it's not a practice day, it's still a significant increase in the amount of time the players are putting in.
So on a typical, you know, when you're saying it's an 8, they get to put in an 8 hours of a week, I mean, you're trying to cram a bunch in because that could be film study, lifting, running, whatever that is. But in 20 hours, obviously, you get a lot. That's got to feel kind of like bonus territory then, because compared to what the guys have been able to do the last several weeks.
You know, particularly for us, that's insightful of you because – as you know, we're a weight room foundation team. And so more than any other head coach that I know, we're in the weight room during our winter conditioning period. And we don't sacrifice any weight room time for film study. Okay. We don't sacrifice any weight room time for on-the-field walkthroughs. And most teams are taking some of that 8 hours and doing some of that film study or walkthroughs. And I even discourage my coaches from doing it. Sometimes we will have things optional. And I discourage the coaches from doing that because I want there to be an off season where the players get away from us and our coaching just a little bit and then come back to spring practice and then do again in the summer, go back into the lifting phase. I want our players to organize their own stuff, player-run practices, et cetera. I want them to love football, but I also want them to have a break. I think anyone who's played sports can relate to, you get to a certain point every season and the progress starts to maybe go a little flatter than it was at the beginning of the season in terms of your skill development, your enjoyment of the sport, et cetera. And I think refreshing time period of an off season or thinking back to high school, other sports, then coming back at a higher level with a higher expectation and new goals. I think that's an important part of the process.
Coach, I wanted to pick your brain, not really pick your brain, but just kind of update listeners, because a lot of times people think, okay, you have your regular season, you finish your regular season, you break for whatever, and then you reconvene in the spring. Obviously, as we've learned throughout this process, you guys have been touching base for quite some time now. Can you just take us through, give us the very brief version of, I mean, I don't want to ask how often are you together, how often are you not together might be the better question for this.
It's really 2 months and 1 week, 2 separate months and 1 week. The 2 separate months for us are that mid-December to mid-January. Obviously, if we were to make a late playoff run and be playing in January, then that would change a little bit, and that's a trade-off that you make as a national championship caliber team that goes deep into the playoffs. the same is true at all levels of playoff football, right? You have a longer season. And so we aspire to lose that break, that one from mid-December to mid-January. And then the second one for us is May. And I could kind of put that month of what we call student-athlete discretionary, where their resources are available. Our strength coaches is there. The weight room is open. And obviously we have field space and the lockers are open and all that stuff. And a lot of guys train pretty diligently during those times right here in Greeley. But it's also the time to go back home for those that, you know, live out of the area or grew up out of the area. So for us, yeah, it's that mid-December to mid-January and then the whole month of May. And then there's spring break. That's the single week that they have off. Other than that, they're either in that 8 hour per week of mandatory training or that 20-hour per week of mandatory training, 20 hours being the spring football session that lasts roughly a month, and then the season. Those are the 20-hour per week.
So after spring, Coach, what happens after spring? You mentioned obviously with May. So spring when you guys are done, what does the summer look like for a Division I football team?
That takes us into May, and there are some coaches that would maybe choose to train through May and give the guys June off or July off. Or a combination of those. The way the NCAA rule is written is that we have to declare 9 weeks of summer conditioning period. And then one of those 9 weeks is another basically discretionary week or week off. And so I choose to you know, train hard through spring practice. We do a lot of lifting in comparison to other teams during our spring practice session. We're a developmental program. I think it's a critical part of what we do. So we're still going to grow and gain strength during the spring practice sessions, even to the point where we have to scale back a little bit with actual practice because we're still trying to grow. We believe that's our path to success here. If I were a coach elsewhere, I might think otherwise, but I think our path to success here is player development and strength gains, weight gains. So when we go into that finals week, academic finals week at the end of April, and we finish spring ball and we have our spring game on April 27th, I believe that at that point, that's the time to let those guys go into their discretionary period, train as they will, take their vacations, take their time at home, and then we're going to bring it back for basically 2 months and ramp right into training camp. We have a few days off right at the end of July just so that the guys can kind of, you know, I think get excited about training camp. We don't want it to go basically from the last day of training to the first day of training camp. That would be a little bit, I think, over the top.
Sure. Wow. I just think it's interesting to always kind of hear about the schedules. Do you have somebody? Because it seems like every couple of years there's schedule updates of when you can practice, when you can't practice. Is that just stuff in your brain at the top of your mind, Coach, or is there somebody there that's like, okay, here's our schedule, here's when you can touch base, here's when all this can happen?
Most places, it's a team effort. You've got a director of football operations that's kind of the logistics manager, and so they're the ones that would take my ideas and put it on writing, put it into our team communication application. But we also have a gatekeeper, our compliance staff. And at UNC, we have two main compliance folks. That's Gator and Caitlin, and their job is to make sure that we don't get into any trouble by not knowing the rules. It's my job to know the rules first, right? Because they're there not to police necessarily, but just to be an extra level of security to make sure that we're not running afoul of the rules. And then Rachel Walton oversees Caitlin and Gator.
Wow, that's a lot to keep track of. It just is. Just listening to you talk about it, I'm still like, oh man. So basically, what I know is there's a good chunk of the year. There's some kind of football activity. There's working out. There's whatever to get ready for the season. It is it's a job. You know, obviously it's a job for you, but for these student athletes, there's a lot on their plate to have to balance. Speaking of those student athletes, Coach, I know we kind of wanted to talk about some of those top performers. Now that we're making that transition from the winter side of things, when we kind of started this podcast, to, well, spring football coming up, as you said, Wednesday, talk to us about some of those guys that maybe stood out, if we can single a couple of those guys out.
Sure. I'll give you a little peek into our meeting yesterday, the first meeting of spring practice, or the first team meeting anyway. And so I got in front of the team and just talked about, we're entering a transitionary phase. Like, for the last 2 months, really 3 months, it's been about the development of speed and power and weight room fundamentals, and we're now moving into football, right? And so painting with a broad brush, there's no question that the biggest, strongest, fastest guys are the best football players, right? But also there is a new opportunity for guys that maybe haven't been at the top in terms of the weight room, or they're not the fastest guy, but now they're able to show some intangibles. They're able to show their football ability, and that's important too. And so I just wanted to make clear, hey, just because for the last 12 weeks I've been preaching about size and strength and body weight and speed, at this point we're going to be evaluating video on a regular basis. So we just kind of went through and talked about the three main areas where guys had, you know, excelled. The top guys on our team from a speed standpoint – Caleb Kwame, Reese Pratts, Peter Castelli, Oliver Ortiz, Kamari Owens, Carver Cheeks, River Stout, Noah Mangum, Cam Taylor, and Braden Monroe. Those are the fastest guys. And the way I was saying it was look, as your ability to improve in any area is directly related to how much truth you can take. And so this is empirical data I just gave you. Mm. If you think you're one of the fastest, but you weren't fast that day, you didn't get a good start, you think that the laser somehow didn't catch you the way that it should have, right? Like, we didn't hand time this. Fine. I want you to believe in yourself. But right now, these are the fastest guys on our team. And then I went through the strongest guys, at least in terms of 225 bench press. And I care about 225 bench press reps for the same reason the NFL scouts do. It's not that you're going to magically become a strong player. In fact, most of the game is played, you know, from the waist down, right, in terms of strength. But the 225 bench press reps is an indication of how hard you've worked at something that's very much football culture. And it just has been that way for decades and decades, the 225 bench press reps. So our top guys in that area, Zach Nowotzki, Frank Thompson, James Betchart, Saxon Wright, Sia Sierra, Michael Jordan, Brooks Miley, Keenan Guthrie, Jax Brown, Wilson Clark, Sam Yongeamutewunai, and Austin Lawrence. Those are the top guys. Those are the strongest guys on our team. And then the last one I did was the strain, which is the 316s, the Misogis, the top performers in those areas. And some of these names are starting to repeat. You got Saxon Wright, Ezra Ekuban, Zach Nowotzki, Isaiah Sierra, Brody Bleek, Jordan Davis, Braden Engelking, Peyton Polson, Caden Meese, Fisher Clements, Reese Pratts, Michael Jordan, Tama Tuitele. And everybody in that room, every body type had a chance to be on one of those three. When you talk about speed, strength, or just the ability to strain, which is kind of like, okay, that's a measure of both speed, strength, heart, fitness. If you weren't on one of those lists, this is what I told the boys yesterday, if you weren't on one of those lists, okay, you should right now be thinking about which the first list you can make next year, right? That's number one. If you're not thinking that way, if your first inclination is to go, that's not football, coach, I don't care about that crap, you belong in a different program because you're not of the mindset to be the best you can be. So I'm always going to bug you. I'm always going to be in your face. I'm always going to be in your mind. I'm always going to be discounting your on-field ability and overemphasizing the off-field development, right? But they go hand in hand. No matter how good of a player you are on the field, you will make yourself better if you're bigger and faster and stronger and you can strain more. And so that was the kind of the crux of our message yesterday was, yeah, we're going into a new period. And from now on, you're going to hear me talk about, you know, what went right and wrong in practice, how we can get better. I'm going to praise the guys who are really excelling in football. We haven't been playing football, but we've been doing something very related to football and especially related to our growth as a program within this conference.
How did the guys take it that weren't on these lists that you're talking about? Because obviously, you know, all these guys, we've discussed the work that's being put into this. Was this handled with a lot of eagerness to just get right back at it, or were there some heads hanging?
I think it's both. And my goal was, I want to be a highly accountable program. My goal yesterday was to get guys thinking, okay, if I don't have a great spring practice, if coach doesn't start to recognize me as a football player, what's my next step? And if it's major improvement over the summer and into next season, et cetera, during my career, however long I have left here, that's what I want first. But if that's not the thought, if the thought isn't a self-reflection and a desire to get better, I want their next thought to be, I need to go somewhere else. I need to go to a different program.
There's so much of this, too, and I don't want to use the term weeding out, because I think that is such a negative, it can be a negative connotation to it. But isn't there a lot of truth to kind of what that means, is by taking care of the lawn, you know, by making sure everything looks good, adding that fertilizer, you're wanting to get those weeds out of there. I'm not much. I'm terrible in the yard, coach. But isn't that kind of what you're doing in a sense? With, you're trying to build these better minds, better bodies, better football players, better humans. But at the same time, if they're not in on this plan, you want to start to see those weeds that stick out and go, okay, these guys might not be long for this program. Is that fair to assess that it that way?
Absolutely. Yeah, any pasture manager will tell you that the most efficient way to get rid of weeds is to take care of the grass. And I do that myself, taking care of our own pastures, right? I want to make sure that you know, if I'm out there just pulling weeds and creating bare spots, new weed seeds are coming in all the time. That's not the way to control weeds. It's mowing, it's fertilizing, it's watering, it's taking care of the good stuff that you have. That's what we're trying to do. And you know, to call a player a weed, obviously that's where the analogy ends.
Sure,
you know,
yeah,
I think we all have the ability to be grass.
Yeah.
And that's you know, what I started our meeting with yesterday, the very first slide. You can see I'm kind of working through a slideshow yesterday.
This is like inside information from
your
coach.
Yeah, I should send it to you.
I would love to take a look at that. I won't put it out on social media or anything.
So the very first, I'll show you this, the very first part of the meeting was for spring ball objectives, spring practice goals. Coaches have to earn the trust of the whole team. And there's a lot packed into that little statement right there, because it's first, like, we've got new coaches in new positions, right? We've got to earn the trust. And I mentioned to you the other day, we might want to talk about winning over the old guard.
Yeah,
right?
I want to get into that.
And that's something we're still very much working on with our team. There is an old guard, and we've got to win them over. We've got to earn their trust.
And these are guys, obviously, that were here from past programs or
– So – Let's get into that in a second.
I want to just finish this thought.
Yeah, side note. There is an old guard. And then I think when I talk about earning the trust of the whole team, what I emphasize to the players, first it's a coach's responsibility. But if some guys don't meet us halfway, or if we fail, maybe is the way you want to look at it, if we fail as coaches to earn the trust of some guys, well, the whole team – We need to earn the trust of the whole team. So we may need to change the shape of the team. We may need to change who's on this team. So you need to make a decision too. Are you going to be open to us doing everything we can to earn your trust? We're going to bring positivity. We're going to point out everything that you do correctly. We're going to be more positive than we are negative, but it's still our job to criticize. I explained all this to the team and then moved on to what I want the player goals to be. But first, I started with the coaches.
Is that, coach, when you talk about that, because I think that's really – that is something that's very compelling to me. When you are wanting to get the whole buy-in from the team, if you start to see, okay, there might be a handful of guys that are not buying in, you might never change that. That's just the way that their mind is made up. If you let that fester – talking about a weed again – you let that fester, then it can consume other guys that are maybe having a rough day or a rough week, and they're easy to be manipulated on this side of things. When you're talking about saying, hey, if I have 90% of the team's buy-in, that 10% either got to figure it out quickly, we've got to figure it out quickly, or maybe we have to reshape the team without those guys in it. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the exercises we did as a coaching staff just yesterday morning was just went through and kind of talked about every player on the roster. We usually talk about them from a physical development standpoint, academic standpoint. We've got all of our support staff there to talk about all these areas. How are they doing in the training room? What's their eligibility like? And then even mental health, which has become a really important aspect of developing a program. Mm-hmm. Like, players are more aware of their own mental health. They're more willing to talk about it. They struggle with it. And I think as coaches, we need to be educated in that field and pay attention to it. But yesterday, the focus really changed to who's with us, who's down with us by their attitude, their behavior, their buy-in, their body weight, their work ethic, their ability to show up day after day after day. Who's down with this coaching staff, right? And we went through every single name on the roster, and it basically falls into three categories. Yeah, this guy's down with us. He's on the fence. Or, okay, this guy's here. He's showing up, or he wouldn't be on the team, right? But if things start to go wrong in the season, there's a high tendency that this guy would turn negative. turn against the coaching staff. And there's not very many of those. And contrary to what it might sound like right now, we're not going after those guys. We want to put a lot of effort and energy. Those are the guys that we need to win over. Everybody who's here is here for a reason. And so now it's a good time to talk about that old guard there. Go ahead.
Well, on that small group that might be out, yeah. What's the timeline look like? I mean, are we talking about the pressure cooker there? We got a timer on that? Hey, we've got to turn this fella into our style of thinking quickly here. We got to make a big decision.
Yeah, I think that's why winning and losing both create a lot of momentum in either direction. And it can be hard to change that momentum at times. And so I think at the point where a player goes negative, it's a day too late if you're removing him after that. Mm. He's trying to win his teammates over. It's not a good place for any player to be in. They don't need to be in that environment. The right thing for them is to move on or lose that opportunity and have a new opportunity to create. And so we just need to be very honest and upfront with how we see guys. And sometimes we're wrong, right? But like just being honest and upfront and really reaching out and doing everything we can to win those guys over. But being super aware of, okay, where are we at as a program? What kind of success are we having right now? And what type of signs do we see? If we're on the lookout, if we're vigilant about it, I think, you know, it's not – these guys aren't a threat to the team. They're really – they're just of a mindset that – right now, you know, they're not going to be very resilient through hard times. And that's what we need to just be aware of.
Yeah, well, and I like the fact going back, like you said, is this a guy that's on the fence right now? Or maybe he's kind of negative, but it's okay. Yeah. But do we see if we struggle in a certain game or a certain week or something doesn't go our way, does that person crumble? And that's something you have to be looking at here on March 26th.
The first thing we have to show them, and here's what I talk to our staff about, you know, part of my job as the leader, as the head coach, is to teach the staff, right? And then the staff goes and teaches the players. The first thing we have to show these guys that maybe we're extra concerned about is, are we down with them? So when they make a mistake, when they have a composure issue in practice, when they seem to be going negative, do we give up on them right away? Or do we clearly, effectively communicate and show belief in them to change in that moment, yeah, or to change over the course of the next few days, et cetera? If we can do that and then they can't reciprocate it, then it's probably just not a good match. But we've got to do our part first.
Because everybody's going to have a bad day.
Everybody might even have
a bad week. Yes. Maybe there's things going on external, family, friends, yeah, life, anything can steer you in a different direction. But I suppose that's where you have to play that. You know, that balancing act of, okay, is this a bad day or is this a pattern of behavior?
Absolutely. A lot of the players on that very short list of guys that we're highly concerned about, a lot of those players are really good players, but I think all of them have critical thinking skills. I think these are competitive guys. There's some guys that doesn't matter who the coach is and what the message is, they're just raised or cut in a certain way that they're just going to keep grinding with a smile on their face. And there's other guys who fairly – you know, if I as a coach say I'm judging everybody by their buy-in, I have to consider it fair game for the players that say I'm judging this coach by how successful he can make me. Mm. And so I don't have any issue with this short list of guys other than, okay, these are the guys we got to win over. We might say these are some of our top prospects in terms of leadership, whether they're going to lead one way or the other. We've got to earn their trust or figure out if they're open to us earning their trust.
So, Coach, let's go back to that. Let's talk about the old guard.
Yeah.
Let's define that.
Yeah. So the old guard, I think of that short list that we're super concerned about, maybe a couple of those guys are old guard. And then there's quite a few guys that we feel like are on the fence that are just still trying to figure it out, but they're not necessarily built in a way that their first inclination is going to be to go negative. So one of our staff members was the first one to bring out that term old guard a few days ago, last week. And Eddie Gonzalez, who's been here as a player, as a coach, he's the longest tenured guy here, longer than any player, longer than any coach. And he just said, yeah, coach, I just think there's some old guard guys. And when I first heard that, the context I heard it in, the connotation that I heard was these are guys that are connected to the previous coaches, And I didn't like that.
Mm.
And so I went home that night and I thought about it more and more. And then I even looked up, where does the phrase old guard come from? You know, I was just trying to really get my mind around what – because I have a lot of trust in Eddie. He's got a lot of insight into the players, the mentality, the makeup. He was here with Coach Collins. He was here with Coach McCaffrey. I know Coach Collins personally. He's a good football coach. I don't know Ed McCaffrey personally, right? But like – regardless of any criticism that any coach that's come through UNC in the last 20 years has got, and we've all gotten our share of fair criticism, right? You know, Ed McCaffrey is a football guy. You know, anyone out there who doesn't have any coaching background and a playing background at a high level like Ed McCaffrey that thinks they could come in and run our program, how can you criticize Ed McCaffrey
sure.
for not having enough college experience or whatever, right? Like, hey, he stepped up and he did the best job that he could, and it's a very difficult job. I know that firsthand. So, but my point is there's a group of players here that have been around a long time, and they very naturally, when coaches are getting blamed and shown the door, all they've got left is each other. So I credit the old guard around here. The old guard was it like historically what I learned is the old guard that was Napoleon's core inner group of leadership. The officers that had been in for a long time, seen a lot of battles, and they were at the forefront of that force. And so and our old guard should be considered the same. Like it's only natural that as coaches come and go, as the program struggles, if these guys stick it out, they haven't jumped in the portal, they haven't gone anywhere, well, they're loyal to each other first. And so I just started to see it a little bit different way of, hey, it's not a bad thing for somebody to be old guard. It doesn't mean that they're only loyal to Coach Collins or to Coach McCaffrey. That's not what it means at all. They're loyal to each other. And yes, it's absolutely our job to win over the old guard. And, you know, so we went through as a staff and okay, who's been around here a long time? And just by their actions and habits, we can still see that they're trying to figure us out. And it's fair game because we're trying to figure them out too. You don't point fingers at them, but let's just figure out who these guys are and let's make sure we're putting in the extra time to make sure that they know that we're down with them.
I think that's – I've always thought about this. It's got to be one of the more difficult things, maybe not one of the more difficult things, but certainly difficult for a coach to do, a new coach to or different a new program is to come in because, yeah, you're going to have a lot of those guys that were there because of a certain guy. They were recruited by this coaching staff. They signed on because of this coaching staff. And to stay on, yeah, there's going to you're kind of selling them on you for a minute. And then you're saying, hey, now it's time to do the things that we're going to do, the way we're organizing it. So that is a fine line to walk. And when you say, like, with the old guard, with some of these guys, is it are they not? I mean, you don't have to comment on this. Are they not vibing with the way practice is handled or lifting the schedules we've talked about? Just the overall demeanor, or is there just a bunch of little things that kind of add up to a big one?
You know, I think it's more that it's tapping into our emotional intelligence as coaches, which is not infallible.
Mm.
But I think everybody knows, you and I know, everybody that's listening knows what it's like to walk into a room full of strangers, what it's like to be the new person in an organization. And I just know that at this – so last year at this time, I was still very much trying to learn names, backgrounds, what year a player – how much eligibility did they have left? You know, I knew – the first thing I started to know about everybody was I could recognize their face as a member of the team. I knew what position they played and I knew how strong and fast they were. But, you know, names came after that. And then backgrounds are still coming along, right? I'm still getting to know the team, right? But I can tell you absolutely, I can go all the way down through our roster and I can tell you who treats me like, you know, like an old trusted friend or like, you know, a coach in every way. They've got the demeanor, they've got the language, they're excited to see me. And I can tell you who's still trying to judge. Hey, can this guy help me? Can this guy help this program? And it's not a bad thing at all. And like I said, I think there may be a high level of intelligence, a high level of the ability to think critically on some of these guys. And certainly they're a loyal group. Just because they don't throw their loyalty at me and our coaching staff right when we show up, and especially, hey, we haven't even won a game yet. We're 0-11, right? Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. If you've got questions, if you've got doubts, I get it. I'm going to keep throwing everything I've got at this every day for you guys. And at some point, I need to see the buy-in. But to be very fair, it's not yet. It's not right now.
Is that small group? Is this all normal, or is it something where you're like, you know, March 26th? I'm a little concerned that this group hasn't turned the corner yet with us, or we haven't turned the corner, as you said, with them. Either way, or is this all just kind of part of it?
Yeah. Well, what's not normal is the historical struggles that UNC has had in football, and so that creates a little different dynamic as opposed to when we came into BYU, a place that always has been successful, probably always will be successful. There's just resources and fan energy and external motivations there that will make that one of the places that seems to just always be successful. Well, Bronco Mendenhall and his staff were very successful. They had the trust of the majority of the team. When we came in, I think players were looking to trust us. Their experience had been great coaches, very motivated. Okay, Bronco Mendenhall moved on. He thought Virginia would be a better opportunity for him at that point. Okay, so here comes Kalani Sitake and his staff. The assumption was that we were, you know, BYU guys, BYU background, know what it's like to succeed there. And the assumption was going to be that we were going to carry it on, and we were able to do that and have success through a difficult independent stretch at BYU. Well, the UNC dynamic is obviously different. The players here are not thinking, okay, here comes the next coach that's going to make us successful again. Here's a UNC guy. Here's a, you know, this is a place where you're kind of – there's a balance with the administration of, okay, do we bring in some of the old successful guards, some of the guys that have those ties to the successful era? Well, that's getting further and further back, and it was also during the Division II days, a very different time in the program. Or do you bring in, you know, me at this point? Okay, well, I've got established success in the Big Sky. I think the athletic director is the only one who kind of cares about that. I think our players are way too young to relate to any success that I had as a coach while I was at Southern Utah. They want to know, coach, can this coach do something for me right now? And I'm down with that struggle.
One of the things, again, that I was so excited about doing this podcast with you, because I had a not a great relationship with Ernest Collins Jr., but I would have him on my regular show. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, hey, we went out to breakfast and then something just clicked, like, hey, these would be good conversations. Obviously, if folks listen to the whole show, they'll get my kind of real thoughts on the other head coach. It's not all that negative. It's seriously not. But we just didn't have that type of relationship. With you, 0-11 meant nothing to me. What meant something to me was I go back to your opening press conference, your family dynamics. Just the way that you say things, the way you talk about things, made this so compelling that I want to be a part of the journey, because a very small part, because I love the openness, the ability to come sit here and talk to me and our audience in so many different ways about what's going into football, the positives and the negatives, the struggles, and then the personality flaws that you might run into, or the strengths of some of these personalities. So I love it, and I know there's going to be those negatives that you're going to run into with these dynamics. But to me, this is the stuff. This is what people want to get into.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm super hard on myself. I have high expectations. It's like dying every time we lose. So to hear somebody say, hey, you know, believe in the direction you're going, and when I hear you speak, I'm buying in. I think so many of our players are there with that. This is a business of public perception, and that's why I care to do stuff like this. And anybody who cares about our program, whether they're, you know, whether they want to criticize or whether they want to praise, it's fair game, and I'm willing to put in the time. I enjoy that part of the struggle. And, you know, all of our players have opportunities to go somewhere else, to do something else. I do too. I'm sticking this out. I believe in where we're going. It's to me at this point in my career, it's not about the ability to make money. It's not about who's on national television more. It's quite frankly, I want to win at UNC. That's all consuming right now for me professionally.
Yeah. Well, and I think that again, with, you know, getting that buy-in and people really realizing what this is all about, they don't have to go, like you said, your student athletes, some of these guys they're not going through the history. They're not researching necessarily. Some of them might. There's a lot of them that probably went and learned everything that there is to know about Ed Lamb. But there's a lot of them that just said, great, what's this guy going to do to help us out and get this thing back on the right track? Because, you know, like I said, when I came up here to UNC in 2005, they were just making that transition to D1 FCS. And I don't think anybody at the time realized it was going to be that long of a transition, and it has been. There has been those struggles for sure.
From a public perception standpoint or a player perception standpoint, if the game can pass up Bobby Bowden, if the game can pass up Nick Saban,
yeah.
if the game can pass up Woody Hayes, Lavelle Edwards, Jimbo Fisher, like if the game can pass those guys, and I'm not saying it did, but from a player perspective and certainly a fan perspective, it did, and an athletic director, all those guys were let go, you know, and before they wanted to be let go. If the game can pass those guys up, any player that happens to be digging deep into the internet to find some success that I had in Cedar City, Utah, you know, 10 years ago now, I don't think that's any type of validation. They need validation today. They need validation this season, and that's what I'm 100% focused on.
One of the other things too, Coach, kind of going into this other point, and I want to get into some housekeeping items that we missed last week, but one of the bullet points we were going over was monitoring standards of development, which I'm guessing kind of goes hand in hand with all the things we've been discussing today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just something I was thinking about. We've got some really good players, some players that I think are prospects that are still 8 to 10 pounds away from where we've asked them to be for spring practice. And those guys are going down the depth chart. It's not that they're not going to get reps. It's just, you know, if it's anywhere close, we're going with the guy who's at the target body weight. We're going with the guy that has excelled in the 316s. We're going with the stronger, faster guy. And that's a little bit difficult to do because as a coach, we need talent on the field to win. As a team, we need the best talent on the field to win. And we're trying to send messages right now of, look, we're building this program long term, and it's a developmental program. And if we allow our defensive backs and our receivers to hang out in the 170-pound range when they should be in the 190-pound range, we're not a developmental program because we're not getting the guys that are rated as highly. We're not getting the guys coming out of high school that have the 3-4 stars all the time. We've set up specifically to do this as player development. And so if guys aren't making those gains in the weight room, if they're not paying attention to their diet, to their rest, their nutrition, their sleep, you know, they're not on the right track for us long term. And so we've got several guys right now that are these first couple of weeks of spring. Hopefully their eyes are opened up. They work hard at it. We put out the initial spring depth charts a week ago to give some of these guys a heads up. And we've already seen, okay, this guy 4 pounds gained over the weekend, another guy 3 pounds gained. And so we're like, I think we're getting there. But as coaches, we really have to remind each other, okay, stay diligent. We would rather build a program with the guys who are 100% bought into being the best they can be. And if we get too enamored on our talent, talent can have a bad day. Hard work, dedication, those don't have bad days.
Well, and as we progress through this thing too, year after year, as you're establishing your culture, you know, you're going to get those guys that they know pre-spring football. They know what that's all about. They know what the workouts are all about. They're going to be those leaders where it's not going to be as – I mean, it's always on you guys as coaches. But when you have the leaders that, hey, I've done this for 3 years now. I've done this for 4 years. They are all going about it the right way. And then the younger guys are coming up and they just – it's easier to jump in. Right now, it's still that, I don't know, the bending of the spine almost where the spine was going one way and you're still trying to crank it back. And it seems like that's a process, but there's definitely progress.
Oh, the progress is so visible. You know what? The things I'm talking to you right now about, you know, singling out some players that need some more of our attention, that wouldn't have been possible last year. Mm. I didn't know who the old guard was. I didn't know who the new guard was. I didn't know who was just going to throw their trust at us and hope for the best. I didn't know who was going to be reluctant about it. Now we know. Now we have a really, really good idea. And I've actually seen one of our coaches, kind of a lower level strength coach. And what I mean by that is the players, you know, I think sometimes the less authority a coach has, the more the players are kind of open and not on guard. You know, they talk freely, right, around each other when the staff member is maybe just a kind of a junior level staff member. Well, one of our coaches overheard one of our veteran guys, one of the guys that's been around here a long time, saying he was talking about his body weight, and he's done a tremendous job. He's gained like 30 pounds of muscle, but he started to get over that target, and I had jammed him up about it, and he got hurt. during training. Just a minor injury. He's back. He's healthy now. But he got hurt with this minor injury. I'm not going to say his name, but just got hurt in one of our kind of mobility conditioning agility drills. And he was telling another player, the day I got hurt, I drank the week before. Mm-hmm. And I had stopped drinking for the whole semester. Coach Lamb said, give me 6 months. Give yourself 6 months. And I was doing that. And then I faltered. And he was explaining that he thought getting hurt was because of that. And he thought he went 10 pounds overweight because he had not taken care of himself that weekend. And it kind of bled into the next week. And then he was overweight and dehydrated. So he's explaining all this stuff. I'm like, Oh, man, the messages are getting through.
Yeah.
The number one cornerstone, I can show you on this PowerPoint right here, the number one cornerstone on the left side of our pyramid is sobriety. And sobriety doesn't always mean alcohol, right? Alcohol. And it doesn't always just mean alcohol and drugs. Sometimes guys, we all have our vices. Are they staying up all night playing video games? Are they just going to the parties? Is it gambling? Like, we all have something that can take us away from the things that we really want long term because of the short term gratitude that vice provides. And this guy was just explaining to his teammate how he's starting to overcome that, and that was a proud moment.
How difficult is that to get those messages across? Because that is a proud moment. That's a phenomenal thing. And being able to put that stuff away and focus, because I'll tell you right now, and this is with anything in life, if people are dedicating their life to, the short-term solution, which is, getting hammered every single night or staying up till 2 a.m. playing video games, sometimes it can seem harmless enough, but then the next day you go to work, you don't even feel like the same person. You just feel like you're out of body almost. How difficult, especially at this age, is that to get that message to these guys that, hey, if you can sacrifice this stuff and you can really put that stuff aside while you're focusing on this, you'd be surprised at what you might see.
I can tell you we got 17 guys out of 86 that right now I just haven't seen the signs that they're 100% bought into the messages.
To me, that's a phenomenal number.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it.
And I mean, we're talking college kids.
And like I say, those 17, they're not bad players. They're not bad people. They're not some of our best players and some of our highest potential for leadership. It's us as coaches that are failing, and they're just a little bit more of a challenge than some of the other guys on the team. And so when you say how difficult is it, I can give you an exact number right now, at least our best estimation where we think we're at. And I couldn't have come up with that number in any type of way this time last year. I wouldn't even have understood the question because I didn't know the players well enough.
That number's obviously changed then. I mean, over the last – obviously last year you weren't even in that process.
That's
but
right.
I'm sure maybe 6 months ago we're not saying 17. We're saying a lot higher there. Or is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've cleaned a lot of it up with guys electing themselves out of the program. We've elected others out of the program, encouraged them to move on. And so a big part of that cleanup was then. And then for the remaining guys, the realization of, oh, wait, this isn't PE. This isn't intramurals. I'm not running the show here. Coach Lamb, when he showed up his very first meeting, he said, you're all my guys. And then all of a sudden that changed. And I told him it was going to change. I said, you're all my guys for this season. If you don't break a team rule, I got your back. I'm gonna make you the very best I can. But at the end of the season, I'm giving you all one season to buy into the way that we do things. And at that point, we had a parting of the ways with a lot of different people. And I think that it wasn't so much that the parting of the ways was good or not good for those individuals or for us as a team from their perspective. It's the guys who remained that said, oh, wait, I have this option too. And these coaches have this option. Like, are we going to continue to have a partnership, or is it better for me to be somewhere else? And I think that was a magical bridge that we crossed in that mid-December to mid-January period.
How common is it for coaches at this level, coach, or even, at the FBS level to really push the sobriety aspect? And as you said, it's not just alcohol. We're talking about a bunch of other vices that keep keep the main thing the main thing, that would do the opposite of that. There's a lot of those things that would knock you off that track. How common is that for coaches throughout the country that are really pushing on that, saying, hey, if we do the right things, if we sacrifice a bit here and there, we're going to be the best version of ourselves that we can possibly be?
Yeah, in my experience, it's certainly not unique, but I think that as coaches, we all strive to be authentic, and I think it's really hard if you're not willing to model that behavior yourself. And so, you know, if the players come over to my house, they're going to see, you know, non-alcoholic beer in the refrigerator. Unless somebody came over, a guest came over and left the other stuff around, you know, I'm modeling that behavior. Our coaches are modeling that behavior. And I think that, you know, just for us, we feel like we want to be our best selves so that we can be the best coaches we can be. And we're willing to model that and sacrifice those opportunities. And we're asking the players to do the same thing. A lot of our players are 21. You know, a lot of our players can, you know, they're of legal age to do alcohol. Marijuana is legal in Colorado. Like, it's their right to do that stuff. It's just not their right to be part of this organization and do that stuff. And that's what we're trying to preach. We're trying to plead. We're trying to hold them accountable. We're testing. We're doing everything we can. But, you know, I very much know what it's like, you know, to try to maintain a difficult training regimen and do it while drinking alcohol and, you know, at nighttime or whatever. And I know that that's not right. I know that's not the way I want to live. And so, you know, I think our players hopefully can respond to that.
Well, and there's so much that goes into being a Division I football player. There's already sacrifices you have to make. But what you're talking about here, and this is what I like, is, hey, you want to get serious about turning things around at UNC? We have to flip this thing. We have to put the focus in, not just on the football field, because clearly for several years, and we can talk about Ernest Collins Jr., we talk about some of that stuff, but for whatever reason, this program wasn't getting over that hump. And so I think, and I'm not saying extreme as a knock or anything, but I think extreme changes are necessary. And man, imagine if these guys are coming in without a fuzzy head, I mean, on a daily basis or a weekly or even once a month, and every day, as you've been stressing, is that got to win the day, win every, you know, all this empirical data that we're using. You're not going to have that great of data if you have one day where you're just kind of not feeling too great.
Yeah. The players can certainly relate to this message that I give a lot of time. Act as if, in other words, there was a time when just playing college football was the dream of all these guys on our roster. You know, whether that started at 8 years old or the 10th grade or something like that, you know, you kind of could see a vision of maybe I can be a college football player. What does that look like? How will I be training? How will I be acting? And the booze, the drugs was not part of that dream. And the same is true right now if they look ahead to an NFL dream. It's not about the booze, the drugs, getting high, you know, staying out all night at parties. It's, hey, if I got that opportunity to be at an NFL training camp, I would give it everything I had. That's the way they think. And so I think it's easy at least to point out to them the connection between, okay, act as if this is your big opportunity. And you're not going to, you know, there are performance enhancers and there are performance detractors. If you're putting the performance detractors, again, whether that's alcohol, drugs, video games, whatever, if you're performance detracting, then don't on one hand walk around and try to front to everybody like you want to be all conference or want to be in the NFL or even just want to be the best you can be. You're detracting from your own performance with your own decisions.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that style too. And again, like I said, as an alum, as a fan, you know, I look at that message and I go, man, you guys have an opportunity that guys like me, I just wasn't good enough. Physically, just not that good compared to what we're seeing here. So when you look at these Division I athletes, I never say that they have a responsibility to the fans or anything like that, but they do have something that a lot of people want. They have that God-given ability that they're honing and they're crafting. They're getting better every single day. And so as an alum and as a Bears fan, you want to see this taken seriously. And not to say that a lot of people weren't taking it seriously over the years, but the messaging now is, hey, let's change the culture of this program. Let's find success consistently for the first time with this program. And that's why I think your message is spot on. It's difficult, but it's spot on. It's something that I really hope 17 more guys can cross over here in the next week or two or less.
Yeah, me too. And and to be fair, those 17, you know, a lot of them are some of our hardest workers. It's just, you know, will they be resilient through bad times? Mm. And so it's, you know, there's a different challenge with each one of those guys. But I think everybody can relate to, you know, kind of, in my opinion, you know, one of our daily prayers, hopes, aspirations should simply be to do the best I can with the gifts that I've been given. You know, to develop the gifts that I've been given to the best of my ability. And anything that you're putting into your body or any habits that you have that are detracting from that, none of us are perfect. You know, I believe that's why we're here on this earth. I believe spirituality. I don't get a lot into specific dogma when I'm talking to our team, but I talk a lot about spirituality, the belief that what you're doing is right for you, the belief that I believe God cares about what we care about. And if any of you happen to want to play tuba or go do pottery or a different sport, God would care about that for you. But because you're doing football, he cares about you being the very best you can in football. And I think it's wrong when we allow ourselves to succumb to our vices and don't hold ourselves accountable. It's not that you're going to be perfect. It's not that I expect you to be perfect. I expect you to recognize when you're detracting from your own gifts.
Well, and it can be a slippery slope too, where you think it's harmless one night and that night might lead to something else or a bad practice or you get hurt or you don't, whatever. It's amazing. And you see enough of those stories too, both at the collegiate level and the professional level. Coach, as we're kind of wrapping up, just some housekeeping items. We didn't get to JB Hall Jr. Last week, your new pass game coordinator and safeties coach. So excited to learn more about this guy.
Yep. I'm really enthusiastic about JB joining us. He's got big sky experience at three different schools, FCS schools as well, down at Utah Tech. Really has done has put in the work as a coach. I've got a lot of respect for guys that will continue to stay in the business. You know, this is not a meritocracy. Sometimes we get hired and fired, you know, over and under other more deserving guys, less deserving guys. It's not a business where it's a meritocracy, and that's really difficult for some young coaches. And so to see a guy like JB and his family that have bounced around, certainly, you know, everybody has aspirations to be coordinators or, you know, at the Power Four level of football. You know, JB's a guy that's sticking out football because of the goal of daily helping young people be better men. And he was working at Utah Tech for one of my former assistants at Southern Utah, Paul Peterson. And that was the first thing when I called Paul. I just said, hey, tell me about JB. And he said, this is one of the best men you can hire. And then, you know, you want to talk football, that's – you know, he said, you know football, Ed. You guys can talk football and make that decision. And for that matter, Preston Hadley can talk to JB, you know, our defensive coordinator, and talk the football part. I was more concerned about what kind of man we were hiring, and he's a tremendous person. He's going to bring a lot of strength to our team.
Starting to kind of get that theme, that trend with this coaching staff and some of the folks that we're getting to know, obviously through you and hopefully through the podcast more, and then spring ball as well. Coach, just on the pass game coordinator, just to refresh our listeners, obviously safety coach, that's pretty self-explanatory, coach of the safeties, but the pass game coordinator. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and that's the guy that's, you know, he's going through, he's looking at all the what the offense is passing, the opposing offenses, and looking at those pass game tendencies, turnovers, things like that.
Sure, that's a component is being able to help the defensive coordinator with strategic game planning or maybe more appropriately just the adjustments in the way that we do the same thing we do every week, but have to adjust it a little bit according to the opponent that we're playing so that we can show up a little faster on certain routes or certain tendencies that the offense might have. But I think maybe a bigger one too is you know, that just somebody as Preston Hadley moves from the secondary to the linebacker core and is going to start paying more attention to the run fits of the immediate front seven. We need to have a guy that's still putting the whole secondary together. DJ Williams is our corners coach, does a tremendous job with our corners from a position control standpoint, developmental standpoint, technical standpoint. And now JB Hall brings a lot of experience where he can make sure that the corners and safeties are on the same page. And, you know, that's typically comes from that safety role. And in the case of having a really experienced guy like JB, I think it's a really good natural fit that DJ's excited about. Preston's excited, has a lot of trust in JB's experience, ability, and work ethic. So Preston can pay more attention to that front.
I would love to. Maybe we'll get JB in here as a guest one day, too. That's my favorite position that you never get to see because I don't have the cool film that you guys get. I get the football cam when we're watching, but I love to see safeties and corners. You know, we see blown coverage and we immediately go to the corner, but maybe it was the safety head over the top or whatever. That, to me, is one of my favorite parts about football. It's actually my favorite part about football, but it's probably the one I get to see the least amount of when you're just watching it on regular television.
Oh, that's a fraternity. So you've got – most of my career has been secondary. I've coached all the positions on defense now, at least at some point. I've coached special teams, been a head coach for a lot of years. But most of my career has been secondary and special teams. And those – that's a special fraternity because nobody really pays attention to the secondary or special teams until something bad happens.
Yeah.
And so there's a pucker factor amongst that fraternity of guys that have coached in the secondary and on the special teams, and we very much can relate to that with each other.
Yeah, well, they always say too with that position group, you got to have a short memory, yeah. But you know, you also want people to remember it the right way too. Yeah. That wasn't me that gave up that coverage, man. I don't know how they do it too. And again, with the way the rules are changing, both at the collegiate and professional level over the last several years. It gets harder and harder to play that position, and it's fascinating. Coach, maybe next week – I know you're a little busy with spring ball, but I always want to pick your brain about the stuff going on outside too with the kickoff changes. We're taking over the – it looks like the NFL is absorbing the XFL's kickoff rule for 1 year at least to see how that goes. Kicker will still be kicking from where he normally will kick, but the kickoff team will be lining up on the receiving team's 40 – and then the receiving line in front of the returners will be on the 30 or something like that, with the returners between the 20 and the goal line. I don't even know how I feel about it yet. I really don't. Yeah. But I'm very curious to see, what do you make of all these? We got the hip tackle. What was it? The hip tackle rule?
Yeah, the drop hip.
Drop hip tackle yesterday. We're seeing that. What do you make of rule changes like this happening pretty quickly?
Love it for the game. It changes the game. And I was of the era where, you know, one of the most coveted positions, a respected position, was the wedge breaker. Who's going to run down first on kickoff and break the wedge? Well, that doesn't occur anymore. There is no wedge allowed, right? You can't get within a certain number of yards with your teammate on kickoff return and form what we used to call a wedge. And there's exciting plays on kickoff return, exciting plays on kickoff. It's always been part of the game. And yet players are getting bigger and stronger and faster. The equipment is getting better. And so like one of the things – I've played some rugby and I love the sport of rugby. People, you know, sometimes will compare that. Geez, if you can play rugby without pads, you can certainly play football. Well, hey, rugby guys are very aware that they don't have pads on. You don't see those type of head-to-head collisions in rugby that you do in football. And as the equipment has gotten better, there's more and more speed and violence in the game. And so for the rules to adjust slightly, yeah, as a purist and traditionalist and somebody who remembers like aspiring to be on kickoff and perform on kickoff, I don't like to see that. And yet for the health of the game and the health of our players, absolutely. So to make the kickoff a little bit more like an offensive and a defensive play, there's going to be kind of a line of scrimmage. Guys are going to be lined up in close proximity to each other. You know, if that can just save, you know, one or two players a year on each team from being out for a period of time on a high speed collision injury, you know, it's worth it. And it just doesn't change the game significantly enough that I think, you know, we're going to lose fans or it's still the most violent game in the world. And, you know, anybody who you know, doubts that needs to actually go and play. I've played the other sports. I've played rugby. I've played football. Football is the most violent game. MMA. That's a different type of violence right there.
Yeah.
But the goal is specifically to knock out, you know, knock
and that can end
out.
Pretty and quickly, too.
Rugby's about scoring the football, you know, scoring the ball. I'm speaking inaccurately there. But as far as team sports go, football, very, very violent. Always will be. It's the nature of the game. These rules aren't going to change that. It's still a more violent game than it was when I played, you know, going on 25, 30 years ago now.
I think that's a great point, too, just about the fact that these guys are bigger, faster, stronger. So when you hear, and I love hearing it from you, Coach, because you do hear a lot of people that come out and say, well, back in the 70s, man, we just rubbed some dirt on it and we were good. It's like, yeah, but not everybody – there were guys that were fit and jacked in the 70s, but now it's almost like everybody is. Defensive ends were chunkier back in the day. Now defensive ends look like Shannon Sharp, a little bigger version of Shannon Sharp. I mean, these guys are freaks of nature.
It's so different. It just put on the film from the 70s. Yeah, there's always been big, powerful guys.
But yeah, and guys I don't want to get in a fight with, sure.
Yeah, the speed, just the combine numbers over the years that they've changed. I mean, Fred Biletnikoff was smoking cigarettes on the sideline for the Oakland Raiders in the 70s. This is not the same game. These are complete freaks. And I'm not just talking about the concussion piece of it, which I think is highly misunderstood and probably there's good attention to it, but it just doesn't happen as often as people think. The injuries that are really occurring are those lower leg injuries, mm-hmm. and the back injuries, the ribs, broken fingers, stuff like that. High speed collisions with very powerful guys.
Yeah, I like going there with you a bit, Coach. Always appreciate it. Very insightful stuff. Fun show today. Got into some really deep topics, just about what you're looking for in this program, and we're excited for spring ball. I'm gonna try to get out. What is it? Is it spring ball? Last question for you. Is it open to the public at all? Can the public come by and check it out?
Yeah, all of our practices are always open to the public. We do have a team of people, including me. You know, I'm not always actively coaching a position every minute of practice, and so usually if I see a strange face there or somebody that I know, I'll take a minute and go over and say hi. I mean, we want to just make sure that people aren't coming over and filming, from Colorado State or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
One of our opponents, uncle of somebody on the team or something like. But the risk of that happening is really low. We appreciate anybody who would spend the time to come out and watch us practice and support and see or just be interested in what we're doing. All of our practices are open.
What time do you guys get rock and rolling on Wednesday?
Yeah, we generally start our practice. It changes a little bit with how much time we spend in the weight room and the film room each day. But just in general, on our practice days, it's 4:30. We also have a flex schedule, so I only know about a week in advance what will actually be our on-field practice days versus our walkthrough days, kind of based on trying to maximize around the weather because we don't have an indoor facility. So I can't really say that there's every Wednesday we're out on the field, but most days at 4:30 over the next month, we'll be out on the field doing either walkthroughs or practice.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Coach going to try to get out there this week. I'm excited about it. And like you said, I think the weather is going to cooperate for the most part this week. We'll see. You never know.
Yeah. If it doesn't, we'll take advantage of that too.
I know you're excited about that either way.
Bad weather team. Yeah.
Yeah. Coach, appreciate it again, my friend. And we'll look forward to catching up with you guys out of spring ball and then getting back for episode 9. We're almost in that double digit territory. That's when you know it's sticking. We're getting there. But we'll look forward to that that coming up next week.
A lot of patience on your part to get us all the way to number 9.
Appreciate I love it. That. I'm out. And, again, the feedback every single week just gets a little bit stronger. So we do encourage folks. Again, we're putting out this podcast through the whole show channels, but now we have the page set up at 1310kfk.com. If you go look at the podcast tab, you'll see Football 52 right there, and we are archiving every single episode, so it'll be right there for you. You can go check out episode 1 or just the most recent one. So, Coach, good luck this week, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brady.